from Miracle Nutrition. With Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you? As we buy and sell real estate. What real estate is that? I don't have any money. You don't need any money. Well, you kind of do, but not for this kind of real estate. Because it's the real estate of our minds. We're going to explore the houses in our head. Hello, and welcome to Don Bourgeoisie's Guide to Success in Real Estate. Do you recognize that sound? That's the sound of a key opening a lock. What lock is that? Well, the lock is the mysteries of houses, and the key is a combination of my 5 to 7 years of real estate experience combined with my 3 years living as a house. Yes, you heard that right, a key. The dictionary defines real estate as a noun, North American. And most of us, even if they have never lived in a house or apartment, have been in one or have found themselves standing in the shadow of one as the sun disappears behind the roof, obstructing our view of its radiant, fiery glory. Then there are those who have bought or sold houses, but even among those who have, can they say that they fully understand houses? What it means to be one, what their existence means and its qualities. In this semi-helpful series, I will explore not only what it means to be a real estate agent or estate agent or housemonger, as they say in the old country, but I will also give you one-of-a-kind insight into the inner workings of these so-called objects, structures that we take for granted. Let's begin by remembering what it's like to be a child. Even if you weren't lucky enough to have a dollhouse, you remember seeing them, small replicas of a multi-room dwelling in one of the rooms of the full-size dwelling, usually a child's room, and before the tiny house, cut through, exposing the insides like a Damien Hirst cow, a tiny house divided, sits that child, arranging the miniature furniture and posing the dolls in ways that reflects what it knows of the occupants in its own house. Like all lessons, this one begins with an exercise in imagination. So imagine what it's like to be and see all in a house. And inside of you are other souls, souls with their own needs and desires and thoughts, people and other creatures. Imagine them being inside of you, a house. And even though you are aware of what they are doing at any given time, they remain a mystery. Imagine.
Why do they say salt and pepper instead of salt and sugar?
I didn't hear what you just said, but I'm pretty sure it was stupid.
I said, why do they say salt and pepper instead of salt and sugar?
Oh, I was right.
Salt and sugar go together, too, but they're also opposite, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
And they say sugar and spice, but, like, that's super vague. What spices? Cardamom? Nutmeg?
Keep going. I'm not listening.
I just don't understand the difference between opposites and complements.
I can clear that up for you. Here's the opposite of a compliment. You're an idiot.
I'm an idiot because I'm a deep thinker.
Deep. Deep like an empty kiddie pool. What are you guys arguing about this early in the morning? I swear y'all are like oil and water.
You mean oil and vinegar. Mr. Acidic over here is making fun of my insights.
It's just that I'm reading the paper and drinking my coffee in peace, and zero self-awareness George Carlin here is doing observational anti-humor. Be good, both of you. Look, does anybody know what this key is? It was in the mailbox.
Was anyone expecting a key?
Did you try it in any locks? No. How would I know what lock it's for?
Try it in all the locks of the house.
I'm pretty sure it's not a key to our house.
Better hang on to it. You never know. Throw it in the key drawer.
Why do we keep all these keys anyway?
You never know.
You never know. But there are dozens, and we don't know what any of them are for.
If you have a bunch of answers, but you don't know the questions, would you get rid of the answers or keep them in case the right question pops up?
I feel like that is not an entirely stupid thing to say.
Thank you, Butchie.
Partial credit where partial credit is due. Well, I'll keep it around just in case. Did anyone else have a weird dream last night? Imagine a vivid dream, the type in which you feel thrust into the middle of things and must make sense of a situation or problem on the fly. All your normal comforts or touchstones or patterns are unavailable to you. You are in a strange new world, and even the things you see, as vivid as you might think they are still impressions. You guess what the situation is. I am traveling, you tell yourself. I am traveling. And that's why my room seems different. The streets seem different. I'm traveling and staying in an unfamiliar place, maybe a hotel. And while I am staying at this hotel, I remember where my room is and that that room is mine. But when my time is up, I must leave that room and also the memories, or rather the memory that that room is where I belong. That place is where my clothes are, my bed. This is the key, and this is the lock. The key is the lock. Or rather, the key changes constantly. Hi, I'm the house doctor. Welcome to Doctor This House. We're here with the master house doctor in the beautiful old house of the Baron of Baltimore. Doc, you've had a look around. What's the prognosis?
Well, this house has seen a lot of good times. It was well designed and well built. It's big. There are wonderful fine architectural details that I've never seen elsewhere.
It's unique.
It certainly is. But,
oh, I saw that butt coming a mile away.
But I think the house is reaching the end of its days.
Can it be repaired?
Well, we can buy some time by patching things here and there, but the structural problems really can't be easily solved. Every house eventually reaches an end.
But some houses are from the 1600s, and they're still standing.
Oh, there are earlier structures than that even, but not every house can survive the same length of time. Fire, insects, weather, earthquakes. There's all sorts of events and insults that can shorten the time a house remains standing.
Well, we better break the news to the Baron. Baron, the doc has looked at your house.
Oh, I hope it's good news. I've lived in this house since I was a boy. It's the only home I remember. I've just gotten it the way I like it, too. It took a lifetime of improvements, but now I'm content and comfortable here.
Well, I'm afraid there's bad news.
Oh, I knew it.
The house is reaching the end of its time as a home.
I suppose that's inevitable. What will await me when I step through the doorway for the last time?
As you step through the doorway of any house as an agent or as a prospective buyer, one of the first things you'll want to notice is there a floor? I know that sounds like common sense, but things like that and my other rule, to make sure that the thing you are walking into is a house and not the gaping mouth of a giant creature, are necessary warnings against occurrences that, though rare, are still possible. Others are probable. Let's run down a list of all the house conditions that might be possible or probable. Probable. The house has some slight wood rot near the garage. Possible.
The house sits precariously on a thin sheet of rock under which is a vast and deep cave, which, should the thin rock erode, would swallow the home like it did those of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram in the Book of Exodus. Probable. The kitchen is outdated and in need of renovation. Possible. The previous owners lined the walls with the desiccated remains of Trappist monks, not in a creepy way, but out of reverence and with the consent of the deceased. Still, though, I think we can get the seller to come down on the price a little after seeing this.
Hey, Charlie.
Yeah, Mike?
What do you figure we're building here?
I don't know. A house?
I thought that, too. But now I'm not so sure.
Why do you say that?
I read where the house gave us the letter B. That it was a symbol for house and worked its way into the language.
Yeah, so?
And the letter B also is the first letter of the words body and bourgeoisie.
Man, I think you drank too much energy drink.
I don't think this is a house. I think it's something more. I think it's always something more. I think these structures we spend months building to provide shelter to people, and those structures, they last a limited number of years and the people move away. I think they're types of bodies.
Bodies? Bodies are filled with blood and gooky stuff and veins.
The water pipes are the veins. The sewer pipes, the bowels. The electricity, the nervous system. The wooden studs and joists, the bones.
Man, I don't know.
I think we're making bodies for souls. I think we're engaged in sacred work. All souls should have bodies. All people should have homes.
Nah, I agree with you there. It's a human right.
It's a human right to have shelter. It's funny how people who are homeless are the least powerful, and yet they are somehow the most feared. And the most powerful, for whom we should have fear, are tucked away in the grandest houses.
Yeah.
We're engaged in sacred work, Charlie.
Yeah.
Bo'sun!
Yes, Captain.
Listen to this. Boathouse, houseboat. Two different things.
Indeed.
A houseboat is primarily a boat, and a boathouse is primarily a house.
Just like monkey house and house monkey.
What?
Or house white and white house.
Oh, I suppose.
House guest, guest house.
Oh, no, that one works.
Thank you, sir. I'm sorry, Captain, but what's your point?
Do you consider this boat your house?
It's a ship, and no.
Okay, this ship house.
Careful, sir.
This ship, is it your home?
No, sir.
Why not? You live here, you sleep here, you work here, there is shelter. There are walls after a fashion.
It feels temporary.
But we've been here since as long as any of us can remember, with no prospect of ever not being here. We live here now, always and forever. We are in this vessel on a vast sea that will eventually swallow us up. Why isn't it your home?
Wherever you hang your hat is your home.
Exactly.
Except you took us away from our hats, that I remember. We are a group of haberdashers and milliners that you shanghaied to be your crew. We miss our hats. Our hats were our passion, our love. We have no hats to hang here. We have no love of this place. So even if we live our entire lives here, without the love, without something to love, we have no home. Love, homes, houses, they're all tied together.
I see.
When there is someone without a home, it is because of a failure in our love.
Oh, I see.
This section is called the open house. When I'm showing a house, I like to have what's called an open house. That's an event, usually on a weekend, where I sit in the house with a sign out front that says, open house. And those who pass by are welcome to come tour the house. Not all of them are prospective buyers. Some just come for the cookies I provide and to get out of the weather for a minute.
Some are curious neighbors who have passed by the house for years and always wanted to see what's inside. It's an extra treat for them when the seller's possessions are still there. We long to see how others live compared to ourselves, to see if the dwellers here behind these walls are the same or similar to us. What are the Joneses, besides being Welsh, doing? There are sometimes events called parades of homes. The homes, of course, do not parade, and we use the word home because it's a house that is not for sale, usually. It's actively being used. It's the difference between a body and a person. And those parade of homes, we drive or walk from one place to the next and see what the owners want us to see. Owners proud of their decor, their furniture, their carpets, their appliances. In the Jacques Tati movie Mon Oncle, a family has a home that is almost completely automated, sparsely and stylishly decorated, alive almost, with windows that resemble eyes and a fountain with a water-spitting fish. They are proud of this home, though it reflects nothing of their inner life, which they may indeed not even have, for they're consumed by appearances and material things. Monsieur Hulot, on the other hand, lives a gritty existence in a rundown part of town that reverberates with the sounds of birds and laughing children and the shouts of emotions from lively inhabitants. I was a house once. I was an open house, I'd like to think. I was a house that required a multitude of souls in me. Messy, emotional, loving souls.
You're using my cereal spoon.
The spoons belong to everyone.
Not that one. That one my grandma gave me. The handle is a rifle, and it says Gettysburg on it, and it's silver.
Again, so what? I'm not eating it. I'm just using it. I'll put it back.
But what if I want to use it right now?
Here you go, selfish.
How is it selfish to want my own personal sacred spoon that no one can ever touch?
Man, you're a special kind of weird.
I share everything else. This house, my clothes.
What would I want or need your tent-sized clothing for?
To make a tent?
Touché.
I know it's weird, but just grant me this one weird quirk.
One?
You have a special coffee mug that no one's allowed to touch.
That's different.
How so?
One, it's breakable, and while if I'd broke it, I'd be sad and disappointed, if you broke it, I'd have to kill you.
Okay.
Also, it was a gift from your grandmother.
I think if my grandmother knew that her legacy was giving gifts that were not meant to be shared, she'd be disappointed.
I'd be disappointed about what?
Oh, hey, Grandma. We were saying how you'd be disappointed because we don't really share the gifts you gave us.
I gave you this house and you share that.
True.
I want you to share the house, but your special things are yours. There's a difference between property and possessions.
Oh.
What to do when you're selling the houses of the dead. Sometimes we have a situation where we're selling an estate. That is, a person will die intestate, and so we must sell their possessions as well as their house. Now, this is the department of a different type of agent. They will come in and assess the value of the things the decedent left behind and have an estate sale. Then, when the house is free of possessions, we can sell the property. Possessions are personal, though, and some that were of great value to the dead occupant may be of no value at all to anyone else. The house remains desirable, though. So I have, over the course of time, collected some odds and ends that were left in this material world by souls that have departed. Maybe it's a plastic snow globe or a crude ceramic made by a child, a keepsake. We say it has sentimental value. Sentimental value. That phrase implies worthlessness. A value that requires an emotional tie to the person or creature it's a reminder of. I never want to let those things go, though. Even if I don't know the meaning of the thing or what the dead Meemaw had in her heart when she saw that handprint in plaster as she passed it every day, but what I want to keep alive is the power of an object to point beyond itself, to be a catalyst for a grander emotion. And usually that emotion is love.
Grandma, Grandma, I made you something at school.
What is it?
Here, know what it is?
Oh, of course.
What is it then?
It's a dog.
No, it's a turkey.
Oh, of course, I don't have my glasses on.
You're wearing your glasses.
Oh, these aren't the right glasses. It is a turkey.
It's for Thanksgiving.
Oh, I can't wait. I'll wear it to dinner.
Wear it?
It's not a ring.
It is, but it's a napkin ring.
A napkin ring. I was just telling Grandpa, I said, how on earth will I keep these napkins rolled up like this? And he said, too bad you don't have a napkin ring.
I made it and we painted it and teacher put it in the kiln.
Wow.
You should keep it with your Hummel figurines.
I'm going to put it right next to the little boy fishing.
The Hummel figurine of the little boy fishing reminds you of me.
It does.
Like the Yadro figurine of Don Quixote reminds you of Uncle Hardy and the Friar Tuck one of Lou.
That's right.
And that dog baring its teeth in the movie Mononcle reminds you of Butchie.
It does. And now I have one more thing that will remind me of you. This wonderful napkin ring. I'll keep it forever.
Welcome to the antique table. What do you have for us?
It's this 1910 Edward VII British penny. My grandfather, David Lord Baltimore, carried it with him in World War I. It was his good luck charm. It never left his pocket. He saw lots of action, but was never so much as wounded. When he returned from the war, he found that his estate had been burned to the ground. The family home was gone, and all his possessions. His land had also been confiscated, and because of that, he was stripped of his title. His family was safe, but they had nothing. All he had was this penny in his pocket, and he pledged never to spend it, but to remember the good luck it brought him. Some may ask, how is it good luck to lose your house and everything in it? But Grandfather would respond, what good is a house with no one to live in it? If I or my family had perished, the house would have been worthless anyway. So they came to this country with nothing, again, only this penny. And they lived with an aunt in Baltimore who charged them no rent. My grandfather took a job as a bartender and would also drive a taxi, first a horse-drawn one and later a car. And when he died, he handed this coin to me on his deathbed. He said, Hans, this coin is the most valuable object in the world because it contains a key. I asked how a key could fit into that coin, and he told me the story that I just told you. So now I have carried this with me everywhere I've gone for the last 50 years. And now I, too, am about to lose my house, and so I ask you, what is the value of this coin?
If it was in uncirculated condition, maybe $50. As it is, though, it's very worn, and so I'd say less than a dollar, unfortunately. But I don't think that's what you mean.
No, it isn't.
Location, locution, locomotion. Does it matter where a house is? There are a lot of things you can change about a house. If the prospective buyer doesn't like the interior color, they can paint it or negotiate to have it painted. Roof in rough shape? They can ask for a new roof. But the location of the house is not negotiable. Now, you can move a house. I've seen it done. I remember a friend in Tallahassee, Florida, lived in a farmhouse out on some rural property. And the house she lived in had previously been closer to town, in a busy section by a highway on-ramp in a location that was now the site of a fast-food restaurant and asphalt. Lots of asphalt. They lifted the house carefully, using engineering and southern luck, onto two trucks in two pieces and drove the house to its current site where it was put together again like closing a Barbie dream house. But most houses stay where they were built. Might be on low ground, near streams, and the surrounding area might not even look like it did when the house was built, as other structures are torn down and others built in their place. Might be next to a hospital or an airport now, when it was in the country. Circumstances change, but there's not much a house can do about it. Not much a house can do about where it was built. The house itself sits quietly and watches the world change all around it. So the location the buyer chooses might not be the location where it stays, though the house never moves. The house never moves.
One thing I like about having a truck is people ask you to help them move sometimes.
Well, not me. That's why I sold my truck. Sick of people asking me to haul stuff.
And that's why I bought your truck. You didn't even tell me the best part, that sometimes they pay you in pizza and fellowship.
Both are too cheesy for me.
Anyway, are you coming with me to help Hans move his stuff?
Yeah, but I can't lift anything because I got a bad back.
You have a bad back?
Did I say back? I meant attitude. I'll just stand there and say stuff like, "You've got no room on this side, better stand it up and carry it lengthwise."
Those who boss and criticize also serve.
Agreed.
Should we bring blankets?
Definitely. I'm going to try to get a nap in on the hammock. I mean to wrap furniture. Oh, God forbid it should get cold.
No, so it won't get scratched.
You're treating Hans's antiques like they're irreplaceable.
They kind of are.
Nothing is irreplaceable.
People aren't replaceable.
And yet, that's basically how biological life works.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, Lou, drive the truck to Hans, and Butch and I will go in the car so we have the extra back seat and trunk.
I hate it when people aren't totally packed, and we spend the last 2 hours carrying armloads of loose wire clothes hangers to the car trunk.
Hans has been sort of broken up about this move, so I don't know how organized he'll be.
I love stuff, but I hate having to care about it. Last time we moved, I had to wrap my coffee mug in 5 layers of bubble wrap, a down comforter, and put the whole thing in a drinks cooler that I then wrapped with duct tape and pillows. Let's go help our friend move.
This is Real Estate Showcase, your television real estate guide to property in your area. This 3-bedroom, 2-bath, mid-century modern gem of a home is located on a secluded street in the desirable Deadman Heights area. Situated in a beautiful wooded 0.1-acre lot and with such amenities as washer and dryer hookup, public utilities, and a cozy galley kitchen, this is a perfect starter home for a young family or a family young at heart. No worries about storage space here. This charmer comes with attic access and a garage big enough for a full-size car or, if you're handy, converted into a cozy apartment. Roof was installed like new just over 10 years ago, and the school district is zoned Bargage Elementary, Gibbs Middle, and Shivers High. Price to sell. The agent is Mike Griffin at Merv Douglas Properties. A country retreat fit for a king. Spacious and full of character, this 4-bedroom, 1.5-bath is priced right for the buyer with an eye for renovation. The potential is here for a gentleman's estate rivaling the grand country homes of Europe. On 10 acres of land in Crabs County, this 1920s brick home is solid with enduring style. Imagine looking out the master bedroom window onto rolling pasture, perfect for horses. A city-maintained retention area doubles as a duck pond. But who's to say you can't introduce some swans for that genteel old world feel? Contact Grace Perot at Rancaster Home Sales for more details. Need to be close to work? Work at the airport? This converted duplex is convenient to work, school, and transportation. 3-bedroom, 5.5-bath ranch home is perfect for pied-à-terre for weekends in the vibrant city of East Croghan or year-round homestead situated right where the action is. Washer and dryer, full kitchen, wall-to-ceiling carpet, and custom countertops, this place was loved and invested in by happy homeowners relocating to Switzerland. Ample parking within walking distance to the bus, zoned for PS21 and Bleak High School. It's waiting for the perfect someone, or you that someone. Contact Richard and Linda Peaks at Crown Jewels Brokers for price and details.
The 7 stages of real estate sales. When selling a house, due to the emotional attachment the homeowners have to their home, they initially feel a sense of shock and denial when they receive the initial offer from a prospective buyer. How could they offer such a low amount for our beautiful place? They are insulting us. How can this be? This may result in a certain amount of pain and guilt on their part. Did we overestimate the value of our home? Have we been tricked, and is our property worthless? They often become angry and will counteroffer with something very high in an attempt to bargain with the seller. When this counter is refused and the seller walks away, depression sets in. They assumed this would go smoothly, but the pain of the moving, of separation, coupled with the realization they might not get what they thought for their property, can be overwhelming. The seller's agent may reassure the homeowners, telling them that this is part of the process and not to be feared. Their spirits lift. They realize that with a little reconstruction and work, the property can be made as best as it can be. As they move towards the final stages of contract signing and closing, they gain acceptance and ideally become hopeful for the future. It isn't easy moving, of letting go of a place. We invest so much of ourselves in our dwellings. A house is a special place, an abode. Even an apartment that you're not the owner of can feel like it's part of you. What will I do now without the familiar sounds from outside? The smells that I've gotten used to. The neighbor's dogs. The train going by. I'll miss the train. The sign from the bar across the street that used to keep you up at night, and now you need to see it even through your eyelids to feel safe and stable. That's the job of a good real estate agent. To see you through all this. To hold your hand through the whole crazy process of letting go of your house. When I was 11, my grandfather designed and built his own house. He had always wanted to do this, always wanted to live in his dream house. And as he got older and his elderly aunt died and left him some money, he decided he was going to build it, and he was going to design it himself. So he got out some graph paper, and he made the floor plans of this house that he would like to live in. He made one wing for he and my grandmother, and another wing for my mother and I who lived with them. And in between that, he made the living room and the dining room and the kitchen. An interesting feature of that living room was a sunken horseshoe bar. My grandfather had spent most of his life as an alcoholic, but he had sobered up when I was born, but he still liked to get other people drunk. He liked to entertain. He liked to have parties. So he built a bar right there in the living room. Most people have them in their basement. But this house didn't have a basement. So it was there, between the family room and the living room. No real distinction between family and living. That's the way to do it. It was white and padded faux leather. Maybe. We kept a TV on it, too. I'd watch TV in there. He designed this by himself. He didn't do the blueprints. He had someone else do that. And he didn't build the house by himself, although maybe he could have. I know he built a garage with my uncle one time in New Jersey, and they almost killed each other doing it, but they got it done. But he hired a builder that usually built big office buildings. And so this house was built with extra thick concrete walls. It was built to last. I remember when the foundation first went in, we would drive by and look at its progress. My grandfather was out there every single day adding details. The driveway was circular, and it had square concrete in it. And the square concrete between the squares had artificial turf. Real grass would be hard to maintain. So this one was artificial and always green and neat and crisp. He had cypress between the windows, those long trees that usually you see in French cemeteries. And in the back, he had a swimming pool screened in
so it doesn't get bugs or alligators or leaves in it. And that home finally came to be, from his imagination, from his dreams, to reality. He was going to live in it with his family. I liked living with my grandparents. They were a generation older than my mother, even. They were that World War II generation that everybody talks about, and because they're all dead. Some of them aren't. I still have some friends that are alive that are in their 90s that were in World War II. And my grandfather would have been, but he had a card that said he worked in a munitions factory and he had a family and he was slightly older. So he didn't actually fight in the war, but his relatives did and my grandmother's brother did. And so I knew that generation. They were some fine people. Not all of them, obviously. And a lot of my grandparents' friends scared me, frankly. My grandfather, later in life, took up being a real estate agent. I think it was just to hang out with his buddies. He'd go into the office. He had a desk there, and he would sit there, and I think mainly just smoke cigarettes and chat, the way you do at the barber shop or in front of a cafe or something. But this was a real estate agency, mainly just for old guys who, when they weren't at the racetrack, were sitting there with their yellow sports coats and their white loafers talking about who knows what, dropping words like escrow and mortgage and amortization, talking about closings and such. So this house went up, this house with carpet in the kitchen. I remember it had carpet in the kitchen because I made it a goal to keep it clean. I would go in there if there was a spot, and I would ask my grandmother for the carpet cleaner, and I would sit there with a toothbrush and get the stains out. And I think really what was happening is I was getting high off the carpet cleaner. But I remember it being a very enjoyable task. I like to be helpful. I was always trying to be helpful. One time those cypress trees that he had out in front, that you usually see in French cemeteries, they got bagworms on them. And I went out there, and I picked all those bagworms off and put them in a bag. Is that irony? I don't think so. It's disgusting. That house, it was beautiful to my grandfather. To me, it was strange. I always knew there was something slightly wrong with it, mainly because it was designed by an amateur. But it fulfilled his needs. He really loved it. Oh, and he would sit there so proud by the swimming pool. And I would pretend to fall off a raft or something to make him laugh. It's really bad to encourage a child to be silly, because then they would continue to be silly their entire lives. Every time he laughed at me, I wanted to be an entertainer. Every time that I told a joke or did some silly stunt and got a smile, I thought, well, this is the life for me. Probably not the best thing. Probably should have said, quit messing around and go read a book. I had my own room, though. And this room was strange, because my grandparents, even though they had given me the room, insisted on having an interior decorator decorate it. And she, seeing that I was a young child and interested in young child things, naturally thought, I think there should be large awnings over the windows in a sort of zebra pattern. And so it looked like I was in some tent in the desert in the middle of Africa. And I never really figured that out. And I believe the carpet was also a strange color, but I think I've blocked it out of my mind because it upsets me a little bit. It was an odd room for any child, but I did love it, and I tried to keep it clean. I remember one time I took some before and after Polaroids of my room being dirty and then cleaned up. And in the dirty stages, I purposely took clothes and hung them off the awnings that were over the windows. Look at this crazy mess. So I made the mess messier than it was, so that the cleanup would seem like more of a catastrophic thing, more impressive than it really was. Now, this house was also where my grandfather died. And he died one Sunday morning. And it was a shock. I knew he had been sick. But he was sort of the temperament and the generation that didn't want to tell you because they didn't want to upset you, thinking that you wouldn't notice when they actually did die. Perhaps if I don't say anything, he will not notice my corpse lying there in bed. But it was pretty obvious. The evening before, that Saturday night, they had had company over. Strange older people who smelled of whiskey and gin. And I remember one of them sort of cornering my grandfather, somebody my grandfather thought was very, very boring. And this man talked to him for a long time. And then he said, "Tony," or whatever the man's name was, "don't you think you should mingle?" And it was funny because there were only about five people there. But I guess what my grandfather was saying is, "Could you leave me alone? I think I might be dying, and I don't want my last thought to be, you know, you talking my ear off about some nonsense." So I knew something was sort of wrong. And then, that Sunday morning, when my grandmother screamed from the other room, I almost dropped my golden grams. I did drop my golden grams. And I never went back to that cereal for a long time because you know how you associate things with bad events? And I thought, maybe there's something about not only this graham-flavored cereal, but maybe graham crackers in general. If I get the flavor of graham, then my gram will scream that her husband's dead. But she didn't scream that her husband's dead. She said, "Something's wrong with him." And I would consider that an understatement. But then again, not really. I don't think there was anything wrong with him. He's just dead. That's not wrong. A lot of people, times we blame people for being dead. What happened? What went wrong? Well, nothing really. I mean, everybody dies. So nothing actually went wrong. It's just life ran its course. And he was sick. But dying at home is a little shocking, especially by this time I was 12 years old, so I had to walk in there and see him laying there, sort of ashen. You know how the dead look, not their best. That's why they put makeup on them at the funeral home. You go, "You need a little makeup or something. We're going to do a makeover." They don't do that on TV. They should have makeovers of the dead. "So here's a dead person not looking so good. What should we do?" "Oh, shove some cotton in their cheeks and paint them orange." So my grandfather lay there, and my grandmother's yelling to call the doctor, and my mom and I were telling her maybe we're at the stage after the doctor, which would be somebody to come on and get him. And I know this sounds very grim, but I have the distance of time that is consoling me. And so I don't really feel the fear and the sadness that I once felt. And yet I still have the wonderful memories. And for that, I feel very lucky because I can remember all the good, funny things about the man. And I can remember that strange, strange house. It was yellow and it was white and it was gold. And it was orange. All these things that he liked, all in one place. And it endured after he was gone. So after we buried my grandfather, and Tony, who had talked his ear off at the party, came up to us and said, "I had a last conversation with him, and I think he really enjoyed it." And that made us smile a little. It's always wonderful to have a little levity at somebody's memorial service. So we laughed at this foolish, boring man, and then we went back to the house, a constant reminder of him. It was a strong presence, because he had designed the place. It wasn't just any old house. It was his dream. We were literally living in my grandfather's dream. My grandmother was inconsolable for a long time. And she believed that she did not have the means to continue to care for that house. And so we put it on the market, as they say. It's not really like a real market. You don't take the house and put it on a fruit stand or anything. It means that strangers come look at your house, criticize it, and then offer you less money than you think it's worth. Finally,
We had to move. We had to take all our things out of there. I had to say goodbye to the zebra pattern awnings over my windows. I had to say goodbye to the swimming pool. That I missed. I like to swim. I said goodbye to everything. To the cypress bushes that I'd picked the bagworms off of. To the strange driveway with the artificial turf in it. To all of that. To the memory of my grandfather's happiness. To his death. I will mention that my grandfather lived in that house less than a year. He built it. He was happy. He got sick. And he got died. He died in less than a year. That's something. And it almost seems tragic. But what if he had died before he built his dream house? Isn't that more tragic? Less than a year. Oh, come on. If you're waiting a year, that's a long time. And he seemed to savor every single moment. So I don't think it was necessarily tragic. If you get to live out a dream at all, that's great. Some people never do. Some people never have their rich aunt die. There's nothing worse than knowing you're going to die and your rich aunt is fine. And you think, well, I guess that wasn't going to happen. I wish I hadn't sort of banked on it. So we moved away from that house. I always wanted to revisit it. I always wanted to go back and talk to the people who lived there and say, this is where I lived as a child. Although it was briefly, just 1 year, 11 to 12. But I had good memories of the neighborhood. I played with other children. There was a family across the street that I would play with that had three children, all of whom were killed in the same plane crash 2 years later. I know that sounds odd, but it's a fact. Maybe that was a cursed street, Hardy. It doesn't seem to be good luck, does it? I mean, those children, they did have a life ahead of them. But you know how things are. And it made me sad, but it also made me understand how brief life can be, that it can end any time, and that I'm not going to let that scare me. I'm going to let that inform my present, which means that I'm going to stay awake and alert and in the moment, and I'm going to stretch those moments out as much as I possibly can. So if I want some sort of sunken horseshoe bar in my living room, I don't care what people think or how silly they think it is. I don't care if an architect tells me that what I've designed is a foolish house. I made this house. I wanted to go back and see my grandfather's silly house. But it was demolished. Somebody tore it down. They realized that why have a one-story house when you can have a three-story house, or one of those houses where the first story is three stories, and then there's other things tacked on, like Mad Ludwig's castle. So the house wasn't even there anymore. So my grandfather was gone, and the house was gone. And where were they? They were in my head. Oh, they are solidly in my head. My head is a house. My head is a house with many rooms. And you'll hear people talking about that all the time. My mind palace. Well, my mind palace, so-called, is not really much of a palace. It's more of just an old house, an old rundown house. And some of the rooms are decrepit, but they're filled with memories. They're filled with great memories, silly memories, sad ones, and I'm adding to them all the time. Now, I know that they're going to all disappear, but the wonderful thing is I won't know it. I won't know when those things disappear. I have to witness the destruction of earthly houses. I have to witness the disappearance of dreams and people. But in my head, I never have to get to the other side, hopefully. When I see cartoon depictions of heaven, it does not comfort me. It makes me nervous. It gives me great distress. If I have to sit on a cloud and be translucent and look down at people I miss, and when I go down to visit them, they don't see me? That seems like a nightmare. Why would I want that? Oh, no. I'm living that now in my head.
When I'm gone, I would like to not notice it. I would like there be nothing on the other side. I would like to see 100% of my life, not 101%.
Well, don't you want to live forever?
Maybe I am living forever. If I never notice I'm gone, how's that not eternity? If I'm never on the other side of consciousness, how's that not eternity? If I live in every second deeply, and when I close my eyes, I don't realize that it's all over. Because it's not. It's all over for everybody who watches me. Then Hardy's gone. But to Hardy, Hardy's never gone. I'm still here. And life does have pain and tragedy, and I imagine if you're sick and dying, it's no fun. But, you know, it's often no fun in the middle, too, when you're not sick and dying. Pain's real. Suffering's real. Joy is real. Love is real. Fun is real. Silliness is real. So, I try to think about those things. I try to experience them. I try to spend as much time with my friends as I can. I try to improve myself when I can. I try to be better and better, knowing that it's all headed, ultimately, to some sort of oblivion. Well, it doesn't bother me. I won't be the first or the last. So I don't mind that they tear down houses. I don't get attached to those things so much. That's a lie. I get attached to them when I'm in them. It's very important when I'm in them. I care about what color that wall is. I care about what's hanging there. And I go around dusting things. There's nothing more futile than dusting. Oh, the dust just comes right back. And what is the dust? You know what the dust is? The dust, some of it, is your skin. Your skin flakes off. And it goes into the air. And it settles on top of pictures and books. Yeah, that's you. Powdered you everywhere. And so you go out there. You spread yourself out. All your fumes, all your gas, all your skin dust, all your hair, all the hair you don't want to think about, all the things that fall out of your nose. They fall out of your nose into books sometimes. That's why sometimes I don't like to open old books, because I think I'm going to open one of these books and there's going to be a nose hair there with something attached from the 19th century. And I really don't want to see that. And I know it's interesting, but it's also disgusting. The disgust endures. And so does everything else, if it's passed on as a memory. I like houses. I like going in houses and looking at houses, looking at old houses. I like castles. I like big houses. I don't want to live in one. You go to something like the Biltmore House or something in North Carolina, you go, can't believe anybody lived here. Then you think, you know, they probably didn't live there very long. You always think those real wealthy people in the past. How long did they enjoy it? Say, William Penn owned all of Pennsylvania. Yeah, for how long? Did he see it all? Did he build mansions on every square inch? Was it all pure pleasure all the time? What's the point? Who cares if he owned all of Pennsylvania? Who cares who owned that palace? I get to walk in it. Me, a peasant. I get to walk in it just like the Lord so-and-so who built it. I can enjoy it. I can enjoy the earth. I did not make the earth. I did not make any of these places. And I can walk among them just like the powerful and the dead, just like they did. Oh, yes. I love houses. I love to think about them. I like to think about buildings. I like to dwell in them. Oh, dwell in them with me. Come into Hardy's house. Welcome. I know this is strange. People come to my house all the time. Chimney Sweep came over the other day, and he's looking around. He's saying, hey, is that a Twin Peaks reference? And I go, well, it's a picture of Laura Palmer. So I would say, yes, it is. Also, I'm surprised that you did not notice my life-size Dougie cutout. Also a Twin Peaks reference. Are you a musician, they always say when they see my guitars. Why, yes, I am. Then he began to talk about how he had lived briefly in Brooklyn. And so I was thinking, how can I steer this conversation to my radio show? Oh, yes, Brooklyn, I have many friends there. I have a radio show. I blurted out. I go around doing that all the time. It's not necessarily about me, always. I also feel like sometimes I'm an evangelist for WFMU. I love the radio station so much. It's changed so many people's lives, mine included. And it is, for us, like a house, like a home, somewhere we belong. We go in, we go out. It is no fixed place. Oh, it is a building, and if you've been there, you go, well, how about that? Yes, it's not the building that's impressive. It's the people. It's the minds. Some of them gone. Some of them dead. But they live on. You can still hear their voices, even the dead ones. You can still hear their voices. You can still participate in their dreams. Oh, it's an amazing thing. I'm so glad that you come into my house today. I hope you've gained something from it. Take anything you want. Anything? Well, yeah, because they're just ideas. Take any ideas or sample them for your songs or your albums. So, you know, wouldn't you like a song called, you know, Butchie's Angry? Or, oh, I know, have a song called Shemp Jive, where it's just everybody going, Shemp Jive, everybody, like that. Do it. Take it. I love you. I ain't going to be here long. And I know that if I come over to your house, you'll give me some soup or something in exchange. I need to ask you for something, too. We got the fall Hellraiser going on where we ask for some help and some money. It's not like the other one. This one's not going to get fabulous prizes necessarily. But what you get is you get a house. You get a home. You get a place to come. And when you're here, it's not, we're not selling you timeshares. You know what I'm saying? You're welcome anytime. It's the John Wick Continental Hotel for misfits. You can walk in it and we say, thank you for coming again, listener. Do you have that gold coin? I don't have any gold coin. Good. This isn't a place for people who have gold coins. Unless you want to give us a gold coin, because we could sure use it. And I would love that if you kick some money, some resources, if you have them. This is, can't take it with you. You can't take it with you. What better legacy than to build a house, to build this great house that is this radio station, and to populate it with the people who are in it, the voices you hear, and your voice, and your ears. Oh, I'm so glad we're friends. Are we literal friends? If our paths cross, you will see, yes, we're actual friends. I'm going to treat you just like somebody I've known for 20 years. Why wouldn't I? We're human beings. We got that in common. I know what it means to struggle. I know what pain is. And if I haven't had your pain, I can imagine it. I let myself imagine it. I have to. I have to, or I wouldn't be able to be friends with you. How could I? If I weren't willing to put my heart and my mind out there, what kind of a friend would I be? If I wasn't willing to feel sad or uncomfortable with you for a little while, I can walk away from it. You can't walk away from you. So I don't mind sharing it with you a little bit. If it makes you feel better, you'd do it for me. I know you would. Think of all the kindness that you have gotten in this life. People willing to hold your hand. Strangers. If you collapse on the sidewalk, people aren't going to just step over you. Some will, but somebody's going to kneel down and hold your hand. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, and online at WFMU.org. You are so precious to us, to me, listener, and I'm so glad that we have this time together each week, and I hope we keep having it. Also, I'd like to remind you that coming up October 17th, have a Zoom live show, and it's going to be not variety, as much variety as I can manage during these times. There'll be puppets. How about that? Is that a selling point? There'll be puppets. I'm going to maybe play some bass. It's going to be like Saturday morning, but it's Saturday night. Isn't that great? So get your Pop-Tarts and cuddle up to the computer, and I'll help you escape for a while. Thanks again, friends, and I'll see you again next week.
I was standing Yes, I know the law. Oh, yes, I know the law. I know the law. Been good to me. Oh, yes,
yes, I know the law.
Oh, yes,
yes, I
know the law. I know the law. Been good to me. Let's say it one more time. Yes, I know the law. I said, yes, I know the law. I know the law.
Get out to the old chill of joy. I'm gonna find Mother. She'll be waiting for me there. I can baby say any word. Said I won't. Keep on working for the Lord. When it's all over, you can be able to say any word. Said I won't. Glory to God.
Lord,
have mercy,
Jesus.
See, somebody may have a fart.